Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim to receive the Torah, and the entire Klal Yisrael waited. They understood what was happening. They understood that the entire Torah was being given over to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they waited patiently for him to come down and to teach them the rest of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was to be Megala to them. It's not exactly clear, but somewhere along the way there was a mistake in Cheshbon. Does the day that Moshe Rabbeinu go up count? Does it not count? Comes the 40th day according to a miscalculation, and the Klal Yisrael are waiting and no Moshe Rabbeinu. The Satan seizes the opportunity. He makes the world dark, black. He shows an image of a coffin in the air. Vadai meets Moshe. The world knew, the world understood, Moshe Rabbeinu died. Now at that point, not all, but some of the Klal Yisrael, the Erev Rav, turned to Aaron and said, we need an intermediary. We need someone to represent us. We can't deal with Hashem directly. We need someone to go between. Aaron, recognizing the danger, because Hur was just killed for standing up to this mob, Aaron said the words L'mochar, he built the Mizbeach, and he said, tomorrow Chag Hashem, tomorrow we'll bring this korban. And apparently, that was considered so egregious an act. The Klal Yisrael were guilty, if not every man, woman, and child being involved in Avodah Zarah, but just sitting there watching and not protesting was considered so egregious an act that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lech Reid, go down, it's over. And not only that, it's very clear that Hashem's Kaviyachol's intention was to destroy the Klal Yisrael. It's over. They had just seen HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They just heard Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and then to exchange Hashem for a cow, an Egel Azov, was considered so egregious an act that Hashem felt that it's proper and roy to kill them. And the Pasuk says, V'ata hanichali, Hashem says, leave me. V'yicha api bahem, and my anger will flare upon them. V'achla'im, I will destroy them. V'escha oscha l'goy gadol. And you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you are making to the great nation. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe, leave me, I'll destroy them, we'll start again from you, we'll start afresh. Rashi makes the diuk, and it's Chazal, Hanichali implies, let me go. And the Gemara says, as if a man is grabbing his friend, and his friend says, let me go, Hashem says to Moshe, let me go and I'll destroy them. What do you mean, let me go? Who's holding HaKadosh Baruch Hu back? Says Rashi, actually what's happening is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is opening up a Pesach. He's saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's toloi b'cha, it's up to you. If you daven, if you mispalel, I'll save them. If not, I'm going to destroy them. It's dependent upon you. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu davens, three psukim, and Hashem decides not to kill the Klal Yisrael. Now, the obvious diuk in this Rashi, I think, is very clear. What if Moshe didn't daven? If Moshe did not say those three psukim, if Moshe didn't say Vayechal, he didn't ask Hashem for forgiveness, it seems very clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have destroyed the entire Klal Yisrael. Now, I want you to understand what this means. Poland, before the war, constituted 3.3 million Jews. That was the Jewish population in Poland at the time. Entire cities, communities, shtetls, you couldn't believe the amount of Jews before World War II. After World War II, there were the 0.3. There were 300,000 Jews left. 90% of Polish Jewry were annihilated. Entire communities, entire shtetls, communities that had been there for 800 years were just wiped out. That's what we're talking about over here. But much more severe. Hashem is saying, I'm going to destroy the entire Jewish nation. Every one of them will now die unless you daven. At which point Moshe davens, and then Hashem says no. So let's ask the questions. Question number one is, how can a tefillah, one tefillah, three psukim worth of a tefillah, possibly make such a difference? Tefillah is powerful, tefillah is wonderful, but how could it spell the difference between life and death, not for a man, not for a family, not even for a community, for the entire Jewish nation? How could one tefillah be that powerful? But there's a much deeper question to ask. And that deeper question is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Shofet, the ultimate judge, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands far better than we what is Yashrus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sat as the Shofet Emes and Dan, the Klai Yisrael, is worthy of Kaloya. What they've done is so severe, so evil, that it's worthy and proper. Din demands that they be killed. Unless you beg. Then it changes. I mean, they should all die. That's what justice demands. Every one of them should be killed out unless you beg. If you plead and implore and beg, then we'll change it all. I don't understand. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu judged them lemisa, very nice Moshe Rabbeinu pleads, very nice he begs. How does that change the fact? If they were chayev misa, they're chayev misa. If they were obligated to be killed, what does this begging change the cheshbon? So question one is, how could a tefillah possibly make that kind of difference? But specifically because Hashem is judging with a very exact system, and Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah can't change whether they're guilty or innocent. And I'd like to see if we could better understand this chazal and better understand what, in fact, we're supposed to take from that. And to do that, I'd like to share with you an interesting little anecdote. I remember very vividly as a child having a dream, a recurring dream. I was a little guy, and whenever the bad guys would surround me and I couldn't get out of it, I would flap my arms and I floated away, flew away. And it wasn't once that I had this dream. On a regular basis, I had this dream any time I was surrounded by the bad guys, depending on what age, which were the bad guys. If I was in big trouble, I would just flap my arms and I would fly away. Okay, a recurring dream, not very significant. Interestingly enough, though, it appears that that's a very common dream. A lot of people report having a similar dream, but also not particularly significant, but it is significant in the following way. The Chovos Levavos explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each animal all of the instincts and all of the natural inclinations to keep itself alive and to keep the species alive. It has the instincts of what to eat, how to find its food, and it also has all of the instincts it needs to keep itself alive, to protect itself and to defend itself. Some animals were granted claws, some fangs, some great stealth, some great speed. And those animals that were not on that end of the food chain were granted either camouflage or various techniques to defend themselves. The porcupine is a rather obvious roly ball of flesh that many animals would love to eat. But the 25,000 barbs on his back that are shot out have a very real way of convincing the weasel, the bobcat, and the fox not to eat him. The skunk is a very yummy morsel for many wild animals, and he's very obvious. You can see him black and white right there, yet the dogs will not touch the skunk. Why? Because one time a dog or a fox will try to eat the skunk turns around, lifts its tail, sprays, and for the next month, the fur of that dog is infected with this smell. And a dog's sense of smell is thousands of times more acute than ours, and he lives by a smell, and the stench, and the for the next month, he avoids the skunk for the rest of his life. The zebra is a very yummy meal for the lion. Yet, interestingly enough, the zebra cannot be found. You look at the Serengeti, and you'll see miles and miles of clear open field, and smack in the middle, a herd of zebra. Hundreds of them. And the lions can't find them. And you may say, what's wrong with you guys? So science now believes what's wrong with the guys are that lions are colorblind. And they can't not distinguish shades of color. The zebra is multi-striped. When the zebras stand together in a herd, to the lion from a distance, it looks like wild grass because it can't see black and white. It can't see gradations of color. It just sees stripes. At a distance, it looks like wild grass, and the lion cannot find the zebra. He's right there. You and I would have no problem seeing him, but the lion cannot because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each animal a way to camouflage or protect itself. Chazal make an observation. The dove has no method of camouflage, stark white. He has no talons. He has no beak. He's as vulnerable an animal as you could ever imagine. The fox, the weasel, the bobcat would love to eat the dove. Yet they don't eat the dove. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the dove a different method of protection. When the weasel's about to jump, the dove just isn't there. He sprouts his wings and he's gone. He disappears. He just isn't there. He doesn't fight. He doesn't move quickly. He doesn't camouflage himself. He uses a totally different system. He just disappears. And Chazal give that as a mashal for tefillah. Ma Yonah, just like the Yonah can only defend itself by spreading its wings, so too Yisrael only defends itself by tefillah. And I'd like to understand what that means. Because when Chazal use a mashal, they're trying to illustrate a point. The point is that tefillah is not a form of weaponry. It's not a form of fighting. But even more than that, it's a totally different system. It doesn't work with merits. It doesn't work because you're roi. It doesn't work because you're fit. It's just you're not there. You disappear. And I'd like to explain what I believe Chazal is saying with that mashal. And to do that, let's ask the obvious question. The obvious question is, how does tefillah work? How does davening work? Let's imagine the following. Let's imagine I need a parnasa, I'm having trouble earning a living, or I'm having trouble having kids, or I'm having trouble finding my basher, whatever my issue is. So I daven. The question is, how does that work? So maybe you'll tell me, it changes me. Before I davened, I didn't appreciate that it was coming from Hashem. Before I davened, I wasn't fit for it. The process of reaching out, the process of recognizing that Hashem is A, present, B, the manhig, the one who orchestrates the world, becomes more clear, because I change, because I become different. I might not have been worthy of what I requested when I began, but through the process of davening, day after day, week after week, month after month, I get it, I change, and then I'm worthy. And that certainly makes sense. But how do you understand davening for somebody else? Let's imagine the following. Rahman al-Islam, a woman has leukemia, a mother of a number of young children, and the kehillah is broken up. Terrible, terrible tragedy, and they gather together for a tehillim rally, an entire hour of davening and davening, beseeching, imploring, tears in their eyes, a beautiful, beautiful tefillah. Well, here's the question. If the woman was roi femisa, if she was slated to die for whatever which reason, how can you affect that? She didn't change. She didn't become a different person. She's in a coma. Very nice that you davened. If she was slated to die before you davened, she should be slated to die after you davened. How does your tefillah make her worthy of anything more than when you started? And I'd like to explain to you one answer to that question. One answer to that question is as follows. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world, Hashem created immutable laws of nature. Heat tends to rise, gases tend to expand, heavy objects tend to fall. Those are laws. Those are inalienable laws. They don't change. They don't change it here. They don't change in Jupiter. Any part of the universe follows those laws. Those laws are not kind. They're not cruel. They are metzias. You leave a baby unattended on the changing table and the baby falls off, you don't blame gravity. Cruel, vicious gravity, why did you kill the baby? Gravity is a reality. When Hashem created this world, He created many, many realities, many laws, and those laws govern physical movement. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world with laws that govern physical properties, so too Hashem created this world with laws that govern the upper world as well. One of those systems of law is something called din. We mentioned this at length in the Tshuva Shmuz, Shmuz number 214. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, it was Allah, it was came in front of Hashem's mind to create it with din. What does din mean? Din means you're held accountable and responsible for what you did. What comes out from your actions, what comes out from your mouth, the results are tied back to you. You're the catalyst. You're the cause. You are responsible. If it could be, Hashem thought to create the world with midas ha-din. Why? Because that's right. That's proper. And your olam haba is dependent on that. If din is not in operation, you have no claim for reward in the world to come because you're not responsible. Any claim that a person has is because I brought this about, I did this, is only through din. But here's the problem. In a system of din, not many of us would last very long. You see, din is very demanding and din is very exacting. Din says you're responsible. Now let's imagine the scenario for a minute. Hashem created me. Hashem gives me strength. Hashem puts me on a planet And I wake up one day and I say, Hashem, I don't like that particular halacha in Shulchan Aruch. I'm not going to do it. Could you imagine what it means to stand in front of a king? Go back 300 years ago. Stand in front of a king. You want to try a good one? Go in front of Ahasuerus. Walk into his throne, into his crown room without being invited. Achas dasu lahamis, you were killed. Esther says to Mordechai, I can't go in uninvited, because anyone who walks into the crown room without an invitation is slaughtered on the floor. And as a matter of fact, Chazal explained that's what happened. When Esther walked in, the guards walked out to kill her. Unless the king puts the sharpet, unless he puts the scepter down, then it changes. They stepped out to kill her, because you don't violate the king's will. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created me to give me, to allow me to grow, and Hashem is present in every particle of the world. It means Hashem is present right here. Hashem created me, Hashem is present, and Hashem gave me mitzvahs for my growth. And right in front of the king, I say, I don't care what you said, I'm going to do what I want. But it's much worse. Because not only is Hashem present in every particle of physicality, Hashem is the Mokom. Hashem keeps every particle of physicality in existence. Meaning to say, this shtender is here because Hashem is keeping it, the earth is here because Hashem is keeping it, and I'm here because Hashem is constantly infusing energy into me. And if for a minute Hashem would stop keeping me in existence, I just wouldn't be here. So while Hashem is keeping me alive, keeping in existence, while Hashem keeps my hand exactly where it is, I take that very hand and I slap Hashem right in the face, Kaviyachol. Not many of us would last very long. Chazal tell us that Sori Menu said to Avram, Danani, let's go in front of Din. She had a complaint to Bei Hagar that Avram didn't treat her with the right respect, didn't defend her honor in front of Hagar. She says, let's go for a Din Torah in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal say she lost 28 years of her life. Because as great a tzedekus as Sori Menu, when she asked for din, exact, demanding justice, not a human being could make it, even Sori Menu lost 28 years of her life. Therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought to create the world with Midas HaDin, it quickly became apparent to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he couldn't do that because the world wouldn't last. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduced something called Rachamim. Rachamim means mercy. Mercy means you have to appreciate where is a person coming from. What does it mean to him? They're mitigating circumstances, mitigating conditions. There are various things that function. But rachamim and din always have to remain. You see, if there's no din in the world, there's no purpose in creation, there's no schar, there's no reward, the world is chaos. If there's no rachamim, there's instant death. So if it could be when Hashem created the world, if here is din and here is rachamim, Hashem created a balance, almost like a slide rule that moves over. And right in the middle, somewhere is the balance, and that's the system used. A little bit of din, a little bit of rachamim. Different times of the year, that slide rule might move over a little bit. Yom Kippur is a Yom Slichu Mechila. The slide rule moves over. There's more rachamim introduced, less din. There's certain days that are more scary than others. Wednesday is a little bit of a scary day. Read the Shir Shel Yom that day, you'll understand why. There's more din operating in the world. There's certain times, certain things, certain conditions that increase more of the din, certain things that increase more of the rachamim. If you'd like to understand how tefillah works, one of the ways that tefillah works is quite simple. It's asking Hashem simply, there's a woman who's sick in bed. I'm not saying she's worthy of living. I'm not saying she's not. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please have rachmanus. Introduce more rachamim into the equation. Move that slide rule over a little bit more to introduce a little bit more rachamim. The woman doesn't change. The act that she did doesn't change. The system of judgment changes. And when the system of judgment changes, everything changes, because she might have been dand lamisa. What she did at the time that she did it under the system of din at the time might have gotten her a judgment of death. But now we introduce more rachamim. The system of judgment changes. Now it's a whole different picture, and she might now live. That's how dominating for another person works, and I believe that's exactly what Chazal are explaining with this mushal. The dove doesn't fight. He doesn't have talons. Doesn't have stealth. He doesn't have speed. He doesn't have power, but it's irrelevant. He uses a totally different system. He doesn't stand in front of Hashem and say, I've learned 15,000 blot. I've schus avos to unbelievable extent. I'm worthy of it. What the dove does is disappear. He takes flight. Chazal give that as a mushal for tefillah, because tefillah is not a logical system in the sense of merit. It's not standing in front of Hashem and saying, Hashem, I'm worthy. It's saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not worthy. Please forgive me. Introduce rachamim into the system. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Av HaRachamim. And Hashem is so forgiving, so merciful, that He'll move the slide rule over and introduce more rachamim into the system. And my friends, I believe that that's the answer for Moshe Rabbeinu. You see, what the Klal Yisrael did at that time was so egregious, so serious, that it was worthy to destroy them. To serve an Avodah Zarah right after you heard Anochi Hashem Lokecha, that's worthy of Kalaya, destruction, nothing to talk about. But all Moshe Rabbeinu did was introduce more rachamim. Hashem said, Hanichli, let me go, I'm giving you the Pesach, it's up to you. If you daven, you could change the equation. You can't add muschusim to them. Even the schus avos are not going to save them. What's going to save them now is one thing, introducing more rachamim into the system, introducing a beg, imploring for mercy, is going to move that slide rule over from din to rachamim, and the judgment will change. Why? Because the system of judgment changes. My friends, if you want an illustration of the power of tefillah, saving a nation, saving the entire Klal Yisrael with three psukim, I don't want this to be misunderstood, but a tzir of this would be if you would tell me that Rav Elchanan Wasserman would have davened a little bit differently, European Jewry would have been saved. Now again, that's a loaded issue because there were many, many cheshbonos and many, many reasons why Hashem was not interested in saving European Jewry, but that's what we're talking about. We're talking about averting a Holocaust. We're talking about the entire Jewish nation slated to die, and one man's tefillah changes it all. One prayer, one man, and the course of history is changed. If you want an illustration of the power, the extraordinary power of tefillah, I can think of no more powerful example, no more blatant and obvious a illustration of the extraordinary effect, impact, and power of davening. Okay. That being said, I'd like to share with you a mashal. Imagine the following. Imagine that you're a computer programmer, and you're pretty sophisticated, and you've done very well, and you've applied for a very, very prestigious job. Apple has a division that they're looking for someone to head up. It's a new division to be in charge of all their new apps, and it requires someone with great software acumen, but also good business knowledge. And it's a very, very prestigious position. I mean, this position makes your career, period. Happens to be that you interview for the position, and you do very well. You get past the first round, you get to the second round, you get to the third round, you stand in front of the VP of operations, you present your case, and he's very impressed. You make it all the way to the CEO, and he's impressed, very impressed. And then you're told that there are now three candidates remaining, and you're the lead candidate. Your entire future, I mean, this is it. This is the dream job of the century. It's dependent on one thing. You have to make a presentation to the board of directors. They're going to sit and make the final decision. You say to yourself, oh my goodness, wow, this is it. I've done this presentation many times before, but you decide I'm going to beef up, you're going to prepare, and you get ready, and you decide you're flying out to Silicon Valley to be ready a day before. Normally you don't do this, but you decide, listen, I can't take any chances, I'm flying first class. I'll pay the extra ticket, I gotta arrive refreshed, I need time to prepare. And as you're waiting to get onto first class, there's an older man next to you with a little bit of a heavy carry-on. He's kind of like having a rough time with it. You say to yourself, should I help him, should I not help him? Come on, I gotta focus. You go back to your laptop and you focus on it. And he kind of schleps his bag and he's having a rough time, but you're too focused, I don't got time. You sit down, first class, you put your laptop down. And who ends up sitting right next to you but that old man? Again, with a heavy suitcase. Do you help him dig it up? Come on, I'm still busy. Normally I would, but you focus on your presentation. You go through your steps. He schleps the bag himself, puts it up on the overhead. He sits down next to you, and you're focused. Plane takes off. You're going through your notes. You're reviewing. He kind of looks over at you and says, oh, that looks interesting. May I ask what you're focused on? Well, sir, I would love to, but I'm kind of busy. I have a presentation I got to make. I'm sorry. And you spend the next 5 hours in your silent world. He gets off the plane. Again, he schleps down the bag by himself. You don't help him. Maybe you should now, but listen, I got to make it. I'm focused. I got my thing to do. Okay, everything's fine and well. You're prepared. You walk into the boardroom, And you notice that the chairman of the board looks a little familiar. In fact, very familiar. In fact, he's the old man. And you say to yourself, idiot, idiot, what was my problem? Hashem was delivering the greatest opportunity. You're hired or not hired based on one thing. Are you liked or not? You could have all the best qualifications in the world. You could be the greatest employee, but if the chairman of the board doesn't like you, you are history, and you understand that you blew the greatest opportunity in your life. My friends, that's a mushel. We don't stand in front of the chairman of the board. We stand in front of God, the creator of the heavens and the earth. But I'd like to share with you something interesting. We as B'nai Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov aren't liked, we're loved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, not because I'm good, not because I've done anything, but because I have schus avos. And I stand in front of Hashem as a beloved son of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and I'm entitled to ask. I'm entitled to ask for everything and anything, and I'm expecting a response. Not because I'm a macher, not because I'm a great tzaddik, but because I am standing on the shoulders of giants. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me because I am a member of the Klal Yisrael. My friends, if we ever understood that concept, the power that Hashem has, the money. How much money does God have? How much money? That's a fair question, right? I mean, right? So if you listen to the Shmuz before, you know, Hashem has real estate in Manhattan. He owns oil wells in Saudi Arabia. He's got diamond mines in South Africa. God's got lots and lots of money, right? The entire gross product of planet Earth. So here's the point. I'm not standing in front of Bill Gates. I'm not standing in front of the chairman of the board. I'm standing in front of the creator of the heavens and the earth, who has oodles and oodles and oodles, not googles of money, way more than that. He's got all the money that money could buy. And I have the opportunity to ask for it. And it's not just money, it's shidduchim, and it's shalom bayis, and it's health, and it's kids, and it's every imaginable issue. How many tzaras does every single Jew have? How many problems? How many issues? And again, if you don't have problems, then you probably don't have kids. Because, Baruch Hashem, in our generation, there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of trouble, a lot of worries. And knowing that I have entree 3 times a day, I can stand in front of the creator of the heavens and earth, ask and expect to be answered if it's for the best. Not everything I ask for is for the best. Hashem, give me $1 million. Maybe, but there are a lot of reasons why $1 million may not be the right thing for you right now. Hashem, make me healthy and well. Maybe, but it could be that that's not the right thing for you. But you see, my friends, what if it is? What if it is, but I wasn't worthy of it because of a particular reason? What if I messed up? What if I blew it? Or what if Hashem is waiting for me to ask? Just knowing that Hashem has the keys to everything, that Hashem is the most powerful, glorious, beyond any comparison, and I stand in front of Kodesh Baruch Hu and I ask, and I should ask, and I should ask for anything and everything, and I should ask all day long because it works. And I think this chazal is a powerful illustration, just understanding that Moshe Rabbeinu stood in front of Hashem and he wasn't tining schusim. He said, Hashem, rachamim. And that changed the cheshbon from din to introduce more rachamim, spelled the success or the failure, kept them alive. Understanding that is a huge, huge concept. But there's one more step, though. Here's one more step. And that's a good question, which I want to get to. But there's one more step I want to hit. Here's the following question. Moshe Rabbeinu stands in front of Hashem and asks for rachamim. Hashem, please have rachmanis. I have a question to ask. Doesn't Hashem have rachmanis? Chavos Vavos tells us that if you take the most kindly, merciful, loving human being you could ever imagine, then multiply that 10,000, 10,000, you don't begin to understand the love, mercy, kindliness that Hashem has for any of his creations. So here's the question. If there's a slide rule, din's over here, rachamim is over here, and the slide rule is too far over, and according to the current system of din, the Jewish nation are going to be killed, why can't Hashem just move it over? What do we need Moshe for? Moshe's going to daven, the davening is going to ask for more rachamim, the rachamim is going to move it over. Hashem is more merachim than Moshe is. Why can't Hashem move it over? And my friends, this question is actually very, very deep. And this question actually was asked and addressed by Ternufus HaRasha. Ternufus HaRasha gained that accolade, HaRasha, not because he was a great tzaddik, but he was a great philosopher, and apparently he had many conversations with Rabbi Akiva. And one of those conversations revolved around Shabbos. One day, Ternufus HaRasha says to Rabbi Akiva, "Tell me, what's so special about this day of all the days?" Says Rabbi Akiva, "Because God wanted this day to be honored." Says Ternufus, "That's not true. Absolutely not true. I'll prove it to you. If God wanted this day called Shabbos to be honored, God would honor it. Yet what does he do? He makes it rain. He brings from one rishus to another. He carries. He brings winds from one part of the world to the other. He carries. Obviously, God does not want to honor this day." Says Rabbi Akiva, "I see that you are Baki in the Torah Yehudim, and I'll explain to you. You are correct. If one man is in one rishus, and he brings something to another man in another rishus, another domain, he's carrying. But if one man is in a very large domain, one large rishus, he can move all around it, move whatever he wants, it's not carrying. HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills the whole world. Hashem is here, there, and everywhere. So when Hashem moves the rain from up there to down there, since Hashem is everywhere and everywhere is his domain, he doesn't violate Shabbos, he's not carrying." Stop. Let's stop. I have a little question to ask. Why didn't Rabbi Akiva just say the truth? Why didn't you say to Ternufus, "Oh, the answer, my friend, is because God is God"? Hashem says in the Torah, Jewish people don't be mechal Shabbos. Man shall not violate these rules. But Hashem is God. The rules don't bind God. Hashem is above all the rules. Would you like to know what the answer to that question is? Rabbi Akiva didn't say that because it's not true. Because if it could be, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Torah and created the world according to the rules of the Torah, if it could be, Hashem bound himself to those rules. Many, many places in Chazal you'll see that Hashem keeps the Torah, keeps the halachas of the Torah, but more than that, is bound to the laws. And if you look in the Medrash Rabbah explains that that's exactly what was going on. You see, there was a cheshbon of din and a cheshbon of rachamim, and Hashem was saying to Moshe, "I cannot budge the slide rule. I created the system of din. I created the midpoint where din is at right now. And according to the way I created the world, the laws of the world are such that the Jewish nation are slated to die. I'm opening a Pesach. I'm opening an opening for you. If you're Mevakesh Rachamim, if you beg, you can change it, but I can't." And now, my friends, you're about to hear one of the greatest chedushim that I could ever imagine. If it could be, Hashem gave so much power to Moshe Rabbeinu as if to say, "Do that which I can't do. I would love to have Rachmanis on the Klal Yisrael. I would love to save them, but I can't do it. I've created a world. I've made laws. I've bound myself to it. You do it because I can't." And when Moshe Rabbeinu davened, what he did was he allowed HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have that which Hashem wanted. And it's a mind-boggling illustration of the power given to man, one man, to uniquely, singularly change history. And you see the power of tefillah to an extent that's hard to imagine. And you may say, what does it have to do with me? Well, I'd like to share with you two things. Number one, what if I tell you that many times you stand in front of Hashem, and if it could be, Hashem says, "I would love to grant your wishes. I would love for you to be successful. I would love for you to get married. I would love for you to have kids. I would love for you to be healthy. I would love for you to have everything, but I can't give it to you because I'm stuck. Based on who you are, based on where you're at, din demands that I cannot give it to you. I wish I could, but I can't." And then comes this magic bullet called tefillah. You stand in front of Hashem and say one thing: "Hashem, I'm not worthy, and I'm not claiming that I'm worthy. Please have rachmanis. B'schus Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, please remember the others. Please have mercy. Please grant me that." And it could change the din. It could introduce more rachamim. It could do that which Hashem can't do. Hashem sits there. If it could be almost stuck, Hashem would say, "I would love to give to you, but I can't. Please ask. Please change the cheshbon." And when you think about this and you understand this, you see the power, the awesome power of davening. My friends, if we had an inkling to the power of davening, I'm telling you, we daven all day, every day. You ever notice when things get like serious? You know, you get the mortgage, you know, the company calls up and you go, "Oh my goodness, I don't pay the mortgage in a month and I'm in big trouble." What do all of us do? The natural reaction, we get serious. Okay, I got to make a plan. Come on, let's get to work. I got to marshal all my resources. Do you understand that Hashem is right there? Hashem has all the money in the world. Now, don't make a mistake. You have to do your ishtadlus according to the ways of the world. And there is a derech hateva that you have to follow. But be wise about it. If you're the Yonah and you're surrounded by the weasel, the bobcat, and the fox who are about to pounce, sprout your wings and fly. Do you have to do your ishtadlus? Oh, you have to. But make sure you do it wisely. Stand in front of the creator of the heavens and earth and say, Hashem, advise me, guide me, please. I got bills to pay. It's very hard. Hashem, I don't know, should I do this or should I do that? I'm not sure what to do, how to do. Please give me the wisdom. Open the doors. Hashem, help me. No one says your ishtadlus is to be done in a foolish way. No one says your derech hateva, the ways of the world, has to be done like a fool. It should be done with brilliance, with acumen, with wisdom. Do as little as you can according to the ways of nature so you have time to serve your Creator. But the only way you get that is if you ask Hashem for help and He guides you. And that should be the operating force throughout everything we do. Before you engage in any activity, you should daven. But not just daven. Daven because you know it's going to change things. Daven because you know it's going to help. Will it always help? Will it always be successful? The answer is 100%. Every single time it's good for you, it will come out that way. But again, not always is the answer yes, because there are many reasons why Hashem does things, sets up situations, there are life situations, there are challenges, there are nisyonos, and not always is the answer the way we want it to be. But knowing that I'm speaking not to the chairman of the board, but to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who loves me, who waits for my tefillahs, and my tefillahs are so powerful that they could change everything, is, I think, a very, very significant point. And now the question comes up, how does it apply to us? That's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the one person in the world. That one human being. One human being in the course of his... In the course of history, one human being was Moshe Rabbeinu. In the course of all of humanity, there was one man. What does that have to do with me? I'm just a pashut human being. I'm but a simple person, and that has no connection to me. I'd like to share with you something interesting. Ronald Reagan was the president, probably one of the best presidents we've had in the past 100 years, and he was the one who really championed the concept of Star Wars. Star Wars was the idea of missiles against missiles. Ballistic missiles are a very frightening thought because Iran is but 33 minutes from here. One nuclear warhead and Boston, Washington, or Lakewood, or whatever is toast. So the concept is heat-seeking guided missiles. Once a missile is shot, you shoot your own missile. It seeks it out, destroys it in midair. Missiles exploded, and it can't harm anyone. It was a theory. It was not that practical because technology had not been really perfected yet. But if you read the headlines these days, you'll see that there is a country in this world that does use this technology now. There's something called the Iron Dome. In the past little while, Israel shot down 40 out of 50 missiles. The Iron Dome is a missile that shoots up and then it creates this illusionary Iron Dome. Basically what it does is it shoots down other missiles, and 40 out of 50 missiles were shot down in midair. An astonishing accomplishment, technological brilliance, an amazing concept. And when you read about that, you should say to yourself, that's impressive. Those Jews know how to develop things. And at the same time, the hair on the back of your head should bristle. Do you understand what a chilul Hashem is? God's chosen people are considered sheep to be slaughtered. 50 missiles are shot into the heart of Eretz Yisrael, and the Kiddush is 40 out of 50 are eliminated in midair, but it's not even considered an act of war. Jewish blood is so cheap that you can kill men, women, children, civilians openly, and it's not an act of war. Any normal country, if a single missile is shot into that country, that is grounds for immediate invasion of the foreign country. That's an act of war, and it's history. There's nothing to talk about. Unless you're a Jew. If you're a Jew, then we kill you, we shoot you, whatever, you know. And if Israel retaliates, the aggressive Israel is on it again. What you should feel when you read this is an awesome chilul Hashem. These are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's people. This is the Am HaNivchar. Do you understand that the Jew is illustrious? Do you understand that the Jew is elevated? How dare you walk on the same sidewalk as a Jew? And not only do you do that, but you shoot missiles into the Jewish population? A person should feel the Chilul Hashem to such an extent that he literally should not be able to go on. And the Mesillas Yesharim explains that not only should you feel the tremendous Chilul Hashem, you should daven regularly for the Gulas Yisrael, for Hashem to redeem us, because I can no longer stand it. I can no longer stand the pain of the Klal Yisrael. I can no longer stand the suffering, the divorce, the oppression, the addictions, the tzaras, the pain that the Klal Yisrael is going through. I can no longer stand the Chilul Hashem, the embarrassment that God's people are treated this way, and a person should daven for the Gula. And then the Mesillas Yesharim says something astonishing. He says, not only should you daven, but you should expect your tefillah to be answered. And if you say to yourself, but who am I to bring the geula? Little me. Who am I to expect Hashem to listen to my tefillah? He says, you don't understand what the Mishnah is saying. When the Mishnah says, Bishvili nivra olam, it means that Hashem created man, one single man, to teach all of us the lesson that Hashem would have created the whole world for one man only. And I'm supposed to understand that when I daven in front of Hashem, Hashem listens. I'm supposed to understand that it could well be that my tefillah alone will bring the geula. And if Hashem decides not to do it, I have to understand that there's some reason why Hashem is not listening. But be'etzem, my tefillah has that power. Now, my friends, it takes a lot of emunas chachamim to understand that. But listen to me. If we had a tenth, a hundredth of that understanding of the power of tefillah, what would our Shemona Esrei look like? What would our bakashas look like? What would our requests look like? What this Chazal is revealing to us is that there's a power of tefillah. It's not just Moshe Rabbeinu. Granted, Moshe Rabbeinu was unique. Granted, he had entree beyond maybe what any other human being could have. But you better believe that your tefillah can save your community. And if it can't save your community, certainly your family. And if not your family, certainly yourself. The power of tefillah is beyond any understanding. Because that's what Chazal is telling us. It doesn't work in the normal operative methods. It's not fighting with talons or with swiftness or with stealth. It's the Yonah says, I'm out of here. He flaps his wings and he's gone. It introduces Rachamim into the system. And Hashem has lots of money, lots of ability, and lots to give. We're not always worthy, but Tefillah can change it. And I think when you hear about a Chazal being Mitzayer, illustrating it to this extent, illustrating what it means, what the impact, what the effect are, I think you have to stop, you have to dwell upon it and understand. And before you daven, you have to think, in front of whom I stand and what do I expect the results to be? If you walk into a Shemona Esrei and say to yourself, not only am I speaking to Hashem, not only am I directly communicating with the Creator of the heavens and earth, I expect Hashem to listen. I expect Hashem to listen and I expect Hashem to answer. Is every answer going to be yes? No. Is every answer going to be what I like? No. But Hashem listens, understands, weighs it, and it enters into the cheshbon, if not now, then later, then next week, then next month, maybe even for my grandchildren, but every tefillah works. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant us the wisdom, understanding, and ability to put this into practice.